I've gotten it ever since he's put it out. In fact, I had the news leader before when they first put it up. I know when I was down there and he and Bronson McClung were setting up the press for the news leader. Bronson was laying down on it, boy, he was greasy, you know. He's president of the bank there, I guess. He has been ever since he pulled out from the papers with Comstock.
Tell us one more time how you found your way up here to Buffalo.
Huh?
Tell us again how you found your way up here to Buffalo.
How I come up here.
Yeah.
Well, as I say, I was planning to go to Akron, Ohio, yeah, because the rubber works was coming up, opening up there, and everybody was going there for work. In some way, my sister had gotten a hold of my Uncle Frank, and he wanted to know what I was doing, and she told him that I was planning on going to Akron. And he sent me a check and asked me to come up here. See? And I come in, went to work for him, and I expected to go to school, too, part-time. And that didn't work out, so I decided to go to work steadily. I carried a wash bottle and so forth, working with the chemist, and I asked him what was taking place in the refining. He ring it off in chemistry. I didn't know H2O was water. And after a few months of that, I went to my uncle and told him that either I learn what to do or I was going back to the country. And it took him some time to get the chemist to show me how to do the refining and explain it to me step by step. And after that, I had already made the boast that if he'd do that for me, I'd do the next one myself without asking him a question, which I did. And from then on, I kept moving up. I got to the point where I was doing the assaying.
What was it they were refining?
Gold, silver, platinum. Not only manufacturing, not only refining, but later on we got into the manufacturing. We manufactured all kinds of dental products. Gold was used in dentistry. We alloyed gold for the jewelers. We sold them alloy and fine gold to make their own if they wanted to do it that way.
That's a handsome ring you have there.
Well, I'll tell you about that directly. Anyway, while I was doing the assaying, it passed along to where we had about the third chemist. The others had been there and hadn't stayed too long or something. And I was doing the assaying, and he was coming through about 3% short in his refinings. My uncle got pretty wrathy about it. He claimed that it was due to certain bullions that was being assayed. I took a refining and done it myself, without the chemist knowing anything about it. I come out all right, a little ahead of the game. And when I done that, he had come through with his 3% short. I'd done that. I asked the old man to make up a refining, let him watch it done. The chemist watch it prepared for refining. I'd watch it, and also him. After it's fixed up for refining, divide it up. I want half of it. That was agreed to. And we went through the process of preparing it, divided it up by weight. My uncle gave him his. He was to give me half and give the chemist half of it for refining. He gave him his half, and when he left the room, he turned around to give me mine. He wanted to know what I was going to do with it. I told him I wasn't going to do anything. Send it to the United States Assay Office, which he did. And when the returns come back, it was about 0.25% over the assays, while the chemist come through with his usual 3% shortage. And at that time, my uncle said, I guess we don't need any more, need the chemists any longer. And from then on, I was in it. The manufacturing, the refining, and everything. And in about 1932 or 33, my uncle got sick. They had a nervous breakdown. And his wife was his second wife. She had a son, and he had a son. And consequently, there was always a lot of friction in between them, beforehand. Anyway, she stepped in be boss, and I could hardly do anything. I couldn't extend credit to the jewelers or anything. She had to be called up to pass on it and so forth. And after about 2 years, I couldn't take it any longer, and I pulled out. I went into the manufacturing, repairing special order jewelry. I made anything and everything. And in a few years, I built up a place. I had about 22 men and 5 or 6 girls working. I'd done repairing all over the country, even as far as away as the Virgin Islands. I can remember doing some things that the manufacturers themselves wouldn't repair or try to repair. I had a big silver vase come to me. Oh, it stood about that high. Sterling silver, and a club down in Pennsylvania had it. And they had a fire. They had a lot of salt metal trophies alongside of it on the shelf, and they splashed against it and spoiled one side of it. They was anxious to have it repaired or rebuilt. The manufacturers themselves wouldn't touch it. I took the job and done it. One old side was spoiled. They had a copy of the engraving that was on it and so forth, and you could see part of it was in Old English. I took a big sheet of sterling silver. In the first place, I took the old vase and put papers in to hold the plaster of Paris, and I filled it with plaster of Paris. I got a sheet of sterling silver big enough to cover the whole half side of it. I took the one good handle off and used it for a pattern to cast cast another one for the other side that was spoiled. Burnished it to fit and cut it down the side so that that's all it showed was just a seam down each side of it.
Pretty delicate work, huh?
And had the engraving copied. I had an engraver that could do the old English engraving. He copied the engraving on it.
That's really, sounds tedious. Sounds like tedious work.
Yeah.
But you enjoyed that, did you? You liked
it? Well, I enjoyed working out how to do something. See, that's been my way all my life. See? I find out how to do it. When I stick my nose into something, I want to know what makes it tick. See? Now, and at the time of going into the jewelry business, all I knew about it was, all right, how to alloy and the casting and the work and so forth. And stones I knew nothing about, excepting diamonds. I knew about diamonds because in the gold business, I take diamonds and hold them for collateral for some of the jewelers that needed credit, and I held them for collateral. I had to learn all about stones and anything and everything when I went into the jewelry business, and I learned. I made class rings. I'm the only individual. There used to be a medal turned out here by the... the name slips my tongue. Jesse Ketchum medals. They give medals to the, I think, the grade school children for, you know, high ratings for the different schools. They had to be up about 90, have a 99% average or something to get one. And they'd done it every year, and it was made out of, they made them in gold, and they made them in silver, and in bronze. The United States Mint at Philadelphia made them. When they come along with the government took over gold, you know, all the gold out of the country, they wouldn't make them any longer, see? I got that job laid in my lap. Oh, it's a big metal, about that big around and a quarter of an inch thick. And coming along during the war, you couldn't get the brass, you couldn't get anything, see. So I went out and got scrap copper from the junkyard, alloyed it into brass, rolled it out to the thickness I want, and cut out the discs to make the metals. And I made them. The only thing I didn't do on them was I could have them done with a hydraulic press a lot better than I could do with my big drop hammer. So I had them, after I cut the discs out, I had them squeezed up in a hydraulic press. Gold plated some of them, silver plated some of them. And left some of them bronze. That's the way they was made.
That's interesting. You were in Buffalo at the time that McKinley was shot, weren't you?
No, that was 1900.
Oh, I thought it was later.
Was yeah, yeah sure. 19. McKinley was shot in 1900.
Oh, that's right.
I'm pretty sure. 1900 or 1901 or something, somewhere along
yeah,
there.
That's right.
But I wasn't here till 1916. I would only been about 4 or 5 years old when he was shot.
Did you, when you left West Virginia, did you feel that the timbering had pretty well destroyed the country, or did you think it was a benefit to the country, or what? How did you feel about it?
What's destroying the country is everybody's letting the country go up. Look at all your woodlands the government owns all over the country, not only in West Virginia. It was better off the way it was down there. When I was a kid, a lot better than West Virginia today. You didn't have to belong to a union to work. And now you do. You fellows know it should know it better than I do about the Consolidated Coal Company coming in there around Webster Springs and opening up a new mine, spending over $1 million and didn't produce a bushel of coal. Do you fellows know that?
Mm-mm.
Well, you...
Do you know about it?
Boy, I'd think you'd know about it. Jim Comstock knows about it.
I'll have to go back and read up on it.
Huh?
I'll have to go read up on it. When was that? Was that?
I don't remember. About a couple of years ago, that's all. There was also some manufacturing outfit come in at Richwood. Equipped a plant and couldn't open it and go to work because they couldn't meet the union's wages and fringes. He also had in his paper about two or three places down at Beckley built and equipped factories and couldn't produce because of labor practices and fringes and so on and so forth.
You think of the union was a benefit in the early years, though? When
old Sam Gompers first started a union, I would say it was on the up and up and clean. Now today, they want everything. They don't want to produce. Now, I don't care, you can take 10 men and put them to work side by side, doing exactly the same work. Some of those men can produce a lot more than the others. Now, all right, you take a bricklayer, all right, he lays up so many brick a day. If he lays them up in 5 hours, that's his 8 hours is in. Another one can't lay that many up in 8 hours. That's all wrong. I started a union myself with my uncle. I dub it a union. We was getting paid so much a week, and each one of us, of course, what different, our wages, whatever they could afford us. And, had to be off a half a day or something. Naturally, he wasn't paid for it and so on. So I suggested that he pay us so much a week. And if a guy needed to be off an hour, half a day, even a day, pay him. The rest of us will do his work. We'll keep it up. And he agreed to it. And from then on, if somebody had to have an hour off, had to have a half a day off, a day off, if they're homesick a week, they got paid. But we didn't have those guys that tell you they're doing something and they're doing something else. If we'd had that, we'd have knew about it.
Yeah, things have really got out of hand, haven't they? Things have really got out of hand. I say things have really got out of hand.
Well, they are. See, all right, the politicians. Well, sure, they'll go and do anything for the labor vote. Look how it is today. One strike or on the government payroll. It is. Anybody that's working and earning, they have to pay it, foot the bill, or it goes in the red. Look where the government's in debt now. It started in 1932, and it's been snowballing ever since. See?
Sure.
I'd like to have the guys that started down in one of those West Virginia coal mines and build a damn good hot fire. It'll burn for a few years. Oh, that's right. That's when it started. And what the hell was it? In 1929, I think... the government debt was about 29 billion, I guess. Look where it is now. Look where it is now. It just can't be done. Now, today, nearly everybody that's in these places is in on between the state and the government. I don't know for sure, but I'll gamble $100 to a donut that me and Mrs. Hoover are the only ones that are paying our bill yet. We worked, we didn't slave, we worked, we saved, we managed. See?
It's nice to be independent, though, isn't it? It's a nice
feeling. Well, the hell of it is, you're not even independent without you're smart enough to outsmart some of the snuckle doodlers. Some of them I wouldn't trust as far as I could throw a bull by the tail uphill. Well, I'll tell you, for 86, I'm a tough bastard.